you need to talk technology. No one gets you more gigs in your hard drive than Adam. It's time for Adam the Computer Guy with Adam Lepp.
Happy Tuesday afternoon. The Adam the Computer Guy radio program, starring yours truly, Adam, now is aired right after the Scott Spears Now program every Tuesday and Thursday. Thank you very much for joining us. We're going to get right into the discussion shortly as I have some interesting topics. I think you'll learn something. As I say, tickle or stimulate a few brain cells and open up some dialogue. That's what it's all about here at the Talking Place, WWGH Radio, talking about some biometric technology at U.S. airports, facial recognition as a way to make security faster, more efficient, more accurate, less invasive to the passenger. Also, Apple has some new iPads coming to a store or mail order outlet near you. We shall discuss that. And also, file sharing, a new system developed by Mozilla, the people behind Firefox and the Thunderbird email program. Remember, we get together every Tuesday and Thursday between about 2:13 p.m. and 3 here on WWGH Radio. If you ever miss one of my programs or any program here on The Talking Place, go to our website, WWGH1071.com, and you can download the program of your choice or listen on demand. Now let's get geeky. Yes, get out the pocket protector. We're going to talk today's top and trendy technology topics. Airport security, a hot topic, an important one, and like many things in the world around us, one affected by and improved by technology, the latest and greatest, and facial recognition, something which has certainly been mulled about quite a bit, makes things easier and also more accurate, plans to bring facial recognition to major U.S. airports in 2 years, by 2021, are on the fast track, although there are concerns about this technology's readiness. President Donald J. Trump, even if we talk computers, Donald Trump gets in the conversation. 2017, he issued an executive order expediting the deployment of biometric verification of the identities of all travelers crossing U.S. borders. It says that facial recognition identification be used in the top 20 U.S. airports by 100% of all international passengers, including American citizens, by 2021. The mandate to accelerate the timeline for implementation of a biometric system initially was signed into law by President Barack H. Obama. How about that? Trump and Obama seem to be agreeing on something, especially something technological. You know, maybe Trump isn't that bad after all. Who knows? You know, Donald, he certainly is one to provide amusement. He's different, and, you know, love him or hate him, he stimulates interest in a lot of different things. Now, critics of this biometric, this facial recognition, have indicated questionable biometric confirmation rates and the lack of adequate legal guidelines as potential hurdles to adoption of the facial recognition plan. So I see it, you take off your shoes and your belt, you could be patted down. The facial recognition to me is more accurate and less invasive and faster. I think Obama, Trump, and myself all agree on this. Obviously, there will be snags, there will be fine-tuning, there will be bugs, but that happens in anything. But I think we're going in the right direction. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security is rushing to get these systems up and running at airports around this great country. According to leaked documents obtained by the nonprofit research organization Electronic Privacy Information Center. Now, Department of Homeland Security is doing so in the absence of proper vetting or regulatory safeguards and in defiance of the law, according to some privacy advocates. Now, I'm obviously all in favor of privacy, as we talk about that on just about every show. But when you go to the airport, you fly to a different country, your security may take a back seat. Your privacy may have to take a back seat to security and making sure things run as they should. It's a tricky situation, but I don't see any reason to skimp on security. And so, again, I understand what the privacy organizations say, and I, on the surface, agree with them, but there are some very extenuating circumstances here. Recently, the Electronic Privacy Information Center, or EPIC, E-P-I-C, made public a 346-page document revealing that U.S. Customs and Border Protection has been scrambling to implement a biometric entry-exit system. The goal is to have the facial recognition technology in place in about 2021, 2 years. The system would scan travelers' faces aboard over 16,000 flights every week. That process will involve more than 100 million passengers traveling on international flights out of the United States. David Katz, a partner at Adams & Reese, said, "A component of this technology makes identification and protection easier, but there is also the potential for mistakes. We have to balance the possibility for a false positive or a mistake in identification against the security that the technology ultimately provides to the larger population. Like if they were to scan my face, might it get confused with Tom Cruise or some other very good-looking and important person? If they were to scan Scott Spears' face, who might they confuse him with? I guess in a joking manner? Never quite know. Not to mention identical twins and people who just kind of look alike. But we shall see. It'll add to the fun, and it'll certainly be a good barometer to see how accurate this kind of technology is." Now, the released documents explicitly state that no limits exist on how partnering airlines can use this facial recognition data. They do not clarify whether any guidelines exist for how other technology companies involved in processing the data potentially could use it. And that's where the privacy comes in. Would it be used for other purposes? Just like how Gmail might take your information and share it with the advertisers and who knows whomever else, and Facebook also, possibly guilty of that. Always a counterpoint and always a potential ulterior motive. Now, during a data privacy meeting in December of 2018, a previous condition was altered by limiting participating companies from using the data, according to the documents, although how it would enforce that new rule is unclear. Now, there is no explanation of current policies around data sharing of biometric information with participating companies and third-party firms. The documents note that photos of non-U.S. citizens are retained for up to 14 days following their departure from the company. So is there a privacy violation, or do you just want to be sure that nothing may happen? As I said, when it comes to airport security, international security, I don't see a reason to skimp. But again, there are counterpoints to this, just like almost everything. So that 14-day holding period is for, quote, evaluation of the technology and, quote, assurance of the accuracy of the algorithms. It's unclear whether the retained photos are intended to be used for further training of facial matching artificial intelligence. Now, Customs and Border Protection skipped portions of the critical rulemaking process that requires them to solicit public feedback before adopting technology intended to be broadly used on civilians. That's according to these documents. This is a so-called touch point for privacy advocates concerned about the potential for privacy, surveillance, and free speech violations that might result from the facial scanning technology. As I see it, I mean, I would tend to agree on the surface, but you go to an airport, and again, you're already taking off some of your clothing and getting patted down. There's a privacy violation right there. You know, you walk out in the street, who knows who's taking your picture or assessing your facial features. So I see both sides, but security comes first, and I like the idea that this is efficient, inexpensive, and should be quite accurate. So concerns are being posed because facial recognition technology currently is troubled by issues of inaccuracy and bias, according to a report on the documents provided by Epic. Again, Epic is the Electronic Privacy Information Center. All these nice acronyms. So what does the ACLU have to say? Well, last summer, they reported that Amazon's facial recognition technology falsely matched 28 members of Congress with arrest mugshots. No comments for me about the irony there. Those false matches were disproportionately people who were not Caucasian. Facial recognition technology is already in use in 17 international airports. Atlanta, New York City, Boston, San Jose, Chicago, and the two in Houston. It appears the United States government is working quickly to get it into every major airport in the country. No mention of the three major airports in Ohio. Well, Cincinnati is technically in Kentucky, but close enough. But we'll see. I'm sure that with the Delta flights in the Northern Kentucky Cincinnati airport, that it'll be coming there soon. So we shall see. But Chicago, that's kind of close. The United States has no laws governing the use of facial recognition. No courts have ruled on whether it could be considered an illegal search under the Fourth Amendment. The accelerated deployment time might create more problems than it solves. According to the leaked documents, Customs and Border Protection wants facial recognition at initial operating capability by the end of 2019. They want to use it for as many as 30 international flights across more than a dozen U.S. airports every day. So back in 2016, so that's when Customs and Border Protection, CBP, began its first pilot, pun intended, I guess, you know, pilot being an airport-based system, for facial recognition technology, and they did it at one of the largest and busiest airports, Atlanta, Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport. That's the full name. Once a day, for a flight from Atlanta to Tokyo, CBP officers biometrically matched passengers' passport photos to real-time photographs. The pilot program involved all passengers between 14 and 79. 3 months later, Customs and Border Protection switched to a daily flight from Atlanta to Mexico City. By late 2016, CBP was running tests on an average of 7 flights a week, according to the BuzzFeed report on these leaked documents. CBP added more international airport locations in 2017. The number running the facial recognition technology now stands at 17 airports, with 3 more in the planning stages. During the 2017 expansion, CBP replaced its departure information system with a more advanced automated matching system, known as TVS, the Traveler Verification Service. It could be used in a virtual, cloud-based infrastructure capable of temporarily storing images and operating via a wireless network, according to these documents from the Customs and Border Protection. The new system automatically could transmit confirmation of a biometric match across other Department of Homeland Security systems once a passenger boarded a plane. The goal for the rapidly expanding facial recognition sites was to further assess facial matching technology as a viable solution. According to the Department of Homeland Security OIG audit, Office of Inspector General, that's what OIG stands for. Lots of acronyms here. You got to brush up on that stuff. So anyway, the DHS, Office of Inspector General, audited the government's facial recognition biometrics program published last year. Customs and Border Protection concluded from those tests that facial recognition technology was the best operationally feasible and traveler-friendly option for a comprehensive biometric solution. Now, the audit from the Office of Inspector General provides a questionable track record for facial recognition accuracy. It covers the time that the TVS, that is the Traveler Verification service was in use, and that is from August to December of 2017. So these field test results, again, this audit of this biometric software, the system where facial recognition is used to screen people who are flying, especially on international flight. Now, with this audit, CBP, Customs and Border Protection, was able to provide biometric confirmation for only 85% of passengers processed. So, 85%, that's not quite as high as we'd like it to be. Its matches for certain age groups and nationalities were inconsistent. For Mexican and Canadian citizens, it was noticeably and more problematic. Customs and Border Protection did not previously establish a reliable algorithm for photo matching. So, again, some kinks in the armor here. Do the benefits outweigh the risks? We'll cover that shortly. The low confirmation rate poses questions about the ability to meet the deadline to confirm all foreign departures at the top 20 airports by fiscal year 2021. And that's something that Mr. Trump would like to see happen. And I would agree, but it needs to be feasible and accurate, and otherwise follow appropriate protocols. And of course, 85%, I'd like to see that a lot higher. Confirmation rates for Customs and Border Patrol's biometric exit system have risen to 98.6%, so much, much better, according to an agency spokesperson. So the benefits, do they outweigh the risks? Facial recognition technology can bolster passenger safety by removing threats. It obviously can be an effective way to vet international travelers prior to their entry into the United States. The experts say when utilized in collaboration with the international law enforcement agencies or in conjunction with other private data sources, it has great potential to stop individuals who have been previously identified as bad actors by law enforcement from entering the country. In general, facial recognition can be more reliable than human beings performing similar functions, especially when an individual already has been identified by another source. Facial recognition technology, according to attorney David Reicher, who is from LegalAdvice.com. He said, facial recognition technology represents a new wave of identity and authentication solutions. International travelers will be able to authenticate their identities much more easily when passing through customs. He said there will be no more searching for a passport and digging through pockets at check-in to show your boarding pass. Going forward, a person's face will be his or her passport. Travelers will now be able to access lounge and VIP facilities without having to show a membership card or a boarding pass. Airlines will be better able to personalize VIP services that they provide. Of course, again, what do the privacy advocates have to say? Privacy advocates maintain that Fourth Amendment prohibition of unlawful searches should limit the government from scanning, recording, matching, and saving a person's face in a massive federal database, according to attorney David Reicher, again from LegalAdvice.com. He said the right to privacy should prevent an unlawful scanning of a person's face to be collected and saved in a central repository owned by the government. There are legitimate concerns of a mass surveillance state developing, whereby an individual's biometric data is obtained without a legitimate purpose. Matan Scharf is a senior security solutions manager at Synopsys. A lot of S's. So this person said the two fundamental arguments consistently heard over the years against the use of biometric methods of identification, not just facial recognition, again, fingerprints and your eye, not just your entire face. So anyway, these arguments heard over the years against biometrics have focused on governmental abuse of power and the inherent risk of compromise. Again, do we trust the government with this information? Well, probably not, but do the benefits outweigh the liabilities and the problems? Well, that further adds to the interesting nature of this. So the question of biometric identification is obviously open to debate as to whether it is beyond the minimum required for effective border control. The second is the lucrative target for hackers that the government's plan could provide. Matan Sharf, and I apologize, I'm not sure if Matan Sharf is a male or a female, so this person, who is obviously very smart, and that's the most important thing, said private information might be exposed in such a scenario in which an individual can have his or her privacy completely destroyed without the ability to recover. Now, facial recognition, like most of your biometric methods, again, fingerprints, just the eye, hands, multiple ways to identify a person by body features. So facial recognition, like biometrics in general, has the inherent advantage of being considered relatively safe. It is hard to fool or circumvent. Concerns revolve more around how the technology is applied than its actual use. For example, the different methods used for facial recognition vary in the level of integrity that they offer, such as the differences between a simple image and an infrared image. Some are easier to fool than others. The most interesting advantage of the currently selected technology is that it is the only biometric identification method in which the sample or the input used, that is the person's photo, has an inherent mechanism for self-destruction, aging, and obviously other things. A man can grow a beard, weight changes, hair color, but are those things going to affect it like aging? Some people, you know, myself, for example, you know, I don't get older, I get better. But some people, even in the course of 10 to 20 years, aging takes a toll and they look entirely different. So that further complicates things. Anyway, in that sense, according to the expert Matan Sharf, compared to the current use of fingerprint scanners, this is a more privacy-enabling solution. So now we ask the million-dollar question, do people, general public, you and I and all other Homo sapiens on this great planet Earth, especially in the United States of America, are we possibly willing to forego these privacy concerns over safety and convenience? Biometric is certainly convenient. Don't have to take some of your clothing off or be patted down. And again, is it accurate? Is it safe? So what does the general public have to say? A survey was recently performed. 23% of Americans who have ever been to an airport admitted to boarding a plane with nothing more than a credit card in place of an official TSA-approved photo ID card. 59% thought that using biometrics when passing through a TSA checkpoint would make flying safer by, for example, increasing identification accuracy. 46% of people surveyed said they would feel safe and comfortable using e-passports, that is, passports with biometric information. And 45% said they would be on board with using a digital ID. 43% said they would be comfortable with retina scans. We talked about using your eye earlier. 43% with retina scans to confirm their identity. The survey was conducted by Accuant. Yossi Zekri, that's a good name. Yossi Zekri is their CEO. And he said, internationally, there are more use cases with biometrics in smart airports, smart cars, smartphones. Now we have smart airports. There are more than 1 billion e-passports in service globally in more than 120 countries. He said today, this is mainly manifesting as a more expedient boarding process via e-gates that use this technology, with the U.S. catching up with the rollout and trial of these gates. The current technology is focused on security and border control. However, there also is potential to use biometric technology to enhance the personal traveler journey by creating more customized retail opportunities and offering conveniences that perhaps seem out of a sci-fi movie today, but easily could be tomorrow's reality. This gentleman, again, the CEO of the survey company Accuant, seems like a very smart, innovative gentleman with a really good name, Yossi Zekri. Anyway, Mr. Reicher, the attorney from LegalAdvice.com, we quoted him earlier, he said, travelers must be allowed to consent to their faces being scanned. To which I say, yes, would someone want to scan Scott Spears' face? Well, maybe. We'll see. I'll ask Scott next time he goes to the airport. Anyway, any data that is acquired by the government during such a scan should be deleted after it's determined not to fit a database of known criminals. There's no reason that the government should be allowed to keep a permanent record of a person's face and other biometrics without their explicit consent. What is needed is a more broad national dialogue about the government's collection and use of biometric technologies. At the highest level of our government, there should be concern and conversation about how such technologies are managed. It's important to ensure individuals' rights to privacy are maintained, even as we seek to leverage the benefits of these technologies for national security. And that comes from another attorney we quoted, Mr. Katz, from Adams and Reese. So again, what do the lawyers have to say? What do the survey companies, the general public, and of course the computer people like myself? Many ways to look at this, but I think everyone agrees it's well worth exploring. Larry Trowell is the principal security consultant at Synopsys. He said while the mandate was signed into law several years ago by, again, Mr. Obama, the technology may not yet be strong enough to be held accountable for national security measures. Let's take the iPhone facial recognition software as an example. When it first came out, Face ID was alarmingly simple to fool. Apple has since strengthened the functionality, and hopefully, that is exactly what Customs and Border Protection is doing in testing their facial recognition technology. So just a fascinating topic from a political, privacy, innovation standpoint. To me, if it can be done with reasonable expectations of privacy, if it's accurate, inexpensive, fast, this is certainly the way to go. And I do invite your dialogue, questions, comments, concerns, complaints, Adam@WWGH1071.com. Let me know what you think. Last time you flew, did you find the security process to be invasive, annoying? Would you rather have someone scan your face? Let's start a dialogue on it. That's what we do here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Adam Lepp here with my Tuesday and Thursday program, now broadcast after the 2 p.m. features on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. So what is Apple up to, you might ask? The latest and greatest from those fine people in Cupertino, California, where their CEO is, his name is Tim Cook, not Tim Apple, as Donald Trump called him. But, you know, Donald Trump's guffaws are just part of the fun. And something tells me, I'm sure Donald or one of his family members is a Apple product user anyway. And certainly he's a frequent tweeter. Well, what's going on with Apple? After I digress, but, you know, a jovial comment, be it about a politician or whomever, just adds to the fun. But yes, Tim Cook, not Tim Apple, is the main person over there at Apple in Cupertino, California. Earlier in March, they announced a new iPad, 10.5 inches, and a refresh of the iPad Mini. The 10.5-inch iPad Air which will sell for $499 or $629 with cellular service. Pretty good device. Wi-Fi support, even if you don't get the LTE support. 64 gigabytes of solid-state storage. Has the latest mobile processor. Mobile processor, that's kind of hard to say. The A12 Bionic chip, that's easier to say. And supports Apple Pencil and the company's smart keyboard. Tim Bajarin, Tim must be a common name for people associated with this product. Well, he's not from Apple. He's from Creative Strategies there in Campbell, California. He said the Bionic A12 is a cut above the processors used in all other tablets on the market. The 7.9-inch iPad Mini, which will sell at a base price of $399 with Wi-Fi, $529 with cellular, also has the A12 chip, as well as Apple Pencil support. Kind of a cool-looking device. The A12 chip boosts overall performance of the new Air by 70%, according to Apple, and doubles graphic performance. The screen, 20% bigger with 500,000 more pixels, has been upgraded to a better Retina display with True Tone technology. True Tone dynamically adjusts the screen's white balance based on the light around it, so it's easier to view in all conditions. Sounds like a pretty fancy-dancy machine and not too much in the price department. The Mini also benefits from the new A12 chip, which delivers 3 times the performance of its predecessor and 9 times faster graphics. Its Retina display is 25% brighter than previous models and has the highest pixel density of any iPad. Both units have an 8-megapixel rear camera, 7-megapixel front camera. The rear camera does all kinds of fancy stuff: autofocus, panoramas, HDR for stills, exposure control, burst mode, and a partridge in a pear tree. Possibly. Well, maybe not, but a lot of great features. Timer shots, auto image stabilization, good stuff. The front camera has many features as the rear camera, including the exposure control, burst, and timer modes. The Air and the new Mini are available immediately for online ordering, and they're coming to stores very soon. Kind of depends upon, of course, where you live. Gold, silver, and space gray are the colors available. Phil Schiller, Apple's senior VP of worldwide marketing, said, "Today the iPad family takes 2 big leaps forward with an all-new 10.5-inch iPad Air. That brings high-end sound, high-end size, features and performance at a breakthrough price, and a major upgrade to the 7.9-inch iPad Mini, which also brings Apple Pencil, Retina display, and the A12 Bionic chip to the many customers that like its compact size." David McQueen is from ABI Research, and they're in Oyster Bay, New York. They're a technology advisory company. He said the new iPad Air is an uptick in technology over previous models. Larger screen, better processor, lighter weight, all while nudging up the processing power to that of the iPad Pro, but at a markedly cheaper price than the Pro. It has also adopted technology like the smart keyboard and Apple Pencil, which was initially just the preserve of the iPad Pro. The 10.5-inch Air seems to be a replacement for the 10.5-inch iPad Pro, which has been discontinued. Paul Gagnon from IHS Market, a research analysis and advisory firm in London, said, "It looks like a refresh of that previous generation of iPad Pro without including all the bells and whistles on the latest version. The focus is to hit the $500 price point." You know, these Apple products, they're cool, but notoriously kind of difficult in the wallet department. Now, the 2018 iPad Pro is meant to be a notebook PC replacement, so the typical configuration is well over $1,000. He said this is Apple's way of maintaining some volume at a mid-range price point, especially to compete with some of the cheaper offerings that have come from Samsung and others. Kevin Kruell, we quote him often, he's in San Jose, he is an analyst at Tyrios Research, said, Apple appears to be focusing the iPad on creative work, like note-taking and sketching. The iPad Mini could be a replacement for a reporter's notebook, notepad, now that there's pencil support. So you don't need to bring the old-fashioned pencil and paper, just take your writing utensil that's designed for this iPad Mini and write on it. Pretty cool. Of course, it does a lot of other things, but that's one of the many useful and I would say old-fashioned features that this device provides. He said it does seem that these products will undercut the demand for the iPad Pro, especially the 11-inch version. Although the rationale behind the Air refresh seemed apparent, the upgrade of the Mini puzzled some analysts. Mr. Gagnon, we quoted him earlier, said, I don't get the point of it. At $400 for an 8-inch tablet, it is much more expensive than the typical small tablet, which is usually closer to $100 or $200. There's some overlap with larger smartphones that have been introduced. So we've seen a drop-off in shipment volumes of tablets with those smaller screen sizes in the last year or so. Worldwide shipments of tablets in the 7 to 9-inch category dropped from 84 million units in 2017 to fewer than 60 million in 2018. The same is true for the tablet market, generally with worldwide shipments going from 176 million units in 2017 to 140 million in 2018. It's a declining category. But most of that decline is coming from the smaller screen sizes, which are being cannibalized by the much larger smartphones. So yeah, why bother getting a tablet when you can just do it with your phone? And it already has the LTE service and, of course, Wi-Fi built in. It's a good point. Do you need to get both devices? Well, the manufacturers, of course, would like you to. Lauren Guenvor. That's a good name. I think it's pronounced Lauren Guenvor. A senior research analyst at IDC said, the Mini refresh also seemed puzzling. I heard rumors of the launch of a new iPad Mini for many months before today, and for the life of me, I couldn't figure out why they would bring back a small screen tablet when they have a smartphone with a screen that approaches the same size as the iPad Mini. That said, her experience suggests that there may be some potential for the new Mini. She said, I do a lot of traveling for work, and I do consistently see the iPad Mini being the tablet that most teenagers and children have for media consumption. The Mini seems to be for either technology laggards or for those who need a device purely for consuming media. Although the tablet market is generally in decline, Apple has been able to buck the trend for the most part. It may continue to do so with its latest iPads. And she said, the second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter is going to look pretty good for Apple tablets. But I don't know how much growth they have left in the iPad after that point. So Apple trying to get renewed interest in the iPad, that it isn't necessarily going to be overlapping with your phone. People spending a few hundred dollars to buy the latest and greatest, the Mini or the Air. And, you know, Apple, they're pretty creative. I'm sure they'll find a way to get this to be a popular product. So, again, we'll keep an eye on this, as we do here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, with my twice-weekly radio program here on WWGH, WWGH1071.com. We call it the Adam the Computer Guy radio program. If you'd ever like to provide a suggested topic or you have a comment, question, complaint about something I've talked about, hey, send me an email on our private email server, of course, adam@wwgh1071.com. What are the smart folks over at Mozilla doing, people behind the Firefox web browser? They recently announced Firefox Send, a free encrypted file sharing service that works on any browser, kind of like Dropbox and other file sharing services. To share a file, you simply visit the Send site and drag your file to a box on the web page. Unregistered users can upload up to 1 gigabyte in files, while registered users up to 2.5 gigabytes. After uploading the files, you choose an expiration time for the link used to share them. Expirations can be set for the number of downloads, 1 to 5, 50, or 100, or in increments of time, 5 minutes to 1 hour, 1 day, or 7 days. You can also provide a password protection for the link. You then click the Upload button, and you're given a URL. The URL contains a link to the file and a key for decrypting it. The person receiving the file can click on it to download the file. He or she would then be able to decrypt it, that is, remove that extra security, and store it on a computer or a mobile phone when the Send app is available for Android. Till then, just on the good old-fashioned computer. Now, this system, this Firefox file-sharing protocol with a lot of security built in, is currently in beta. Nick Gwynn, Mozilla's VP of Product Strategy, said there are no hoops for recipients to jump through. They just receive a link to click and download the file, and they don't need to have a Firefox account to access the file, versus services like Dropbox that are a bit more invasive. This also seems more secure and easier to use, so I think it will definitely be successful. Mr. Gwynn, again a VP over at Mozilla, said the sharing experience is seamless for both parties and as quick as sending an email. Now, obviously, this new service, it's called Send, a file sharing system from Mozilla, the creators of Firefox and the email program Thunderbird, has a number of uses for consumers. Their VP, again, Nick Gwynn, said, imagine the last time you moved into a new apartment or purchased a home and had to share financial information like your credit card, your credit report over the web. In situations like this, you may want to offer the recipient one-time or limited access to those files. With Send, you can feel safe that your personal information does not live somewhere in the cloud indefinitely. Other services for sharing files, we mentioned Dropbox. Of course, Google Drive and Microsoft OneDrive are obviously available and well-known, but they don't have some of the great features of Send. Ross Rubin, we quote him often, he's from Reticle Research in New York City, said they're geared toward more permanent file storage. They're trying to get you to pay for more permanent storage. That's how they make money. So they don't have much interest in helping you effectively manage your space. So this new Send protocol from Mozilla would seem to have many advantages. So what else is good about this new service called Send? It works inside any browser. According to Tanner Johnson from IHS Market in London, makes things easier to organize and send. But it doesn't mean that consumers will be rushing to share their files securely. He said, unfortunately, we live in a very complacent society security-wise, so a lot of these services, unless they're very user-friendly and require little input and setup from the user, will not be adopted quickly. You'd be surprised how many people refuse to enact two-factor authentication on their devices because setting up the account and configuration is just too taxing. So they throw their hands in the air and just give up. One drawback to Send is that when recipients have an unencrypted copy of a file, they can do anything with it. You need to trust the individual you're sending the information to. If you have something you want to conceal or keep private, you have to trust that person will not turn around and share it with someone else. Now, Send is designed to foil a man-in-the-middle attack in which an unauthorized person snatches a message from a sender before it reaches a recipient. With Send, even if a message is intercepted, it's illegible because it's encrypted. While secure file sharing has not gained wide consumer acceptance, demand for it has been growing. As more stories appear about the mismanagement of data, visibility will grow, which will drive adoption. Send will attract security-minded individuals as well as those concerned with basic digital security hygiene. Phil Zimmerman, he created the PGP, which stands for Pretty Good Privacy, a well-known encryption method which has been around a long time. He is a professor in the Netherlands at Delft University of Technology. Obviously, what he has to say will be important. He said it's an interesting product. It's certainly better than a service that uploads files without encryption, or uploads encrypted files with the key to decrypt them. Although Mozilla's browser, Fortunes, have been declining, Send is an example of its strategy to remain relevant. Like with Apple, a way to boost interest in their products. At Mozilla, we are always committed to people's security and privacy. That's from, again, Nick Wynn, one of their VPs. He said, we're continuously looking for new ways to fulfill that promise, whether it's through the browser, apps, or services. So, some good stuff coming from Mozilla, and earlier talking about the new fancy-dancy and not overly expensive iPads from Apple. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place with great programming for you every single day. This show is about technology, trendy technology topics, and oftentimes how politics and technology tend to go hand in hand more every day. The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 FM in Marion and online at WWGH1071.com.